What number is this, Chip?
Zilch 190, Davy Jones, The Bell Record Story, released from 7A, with Glenn Gretland and Mark Kleiner and Monkey News.
Okay, no, I mean, like, don't get excited, man. It's because I'm short, I know.
You're listening to Zilch, a Monkeys podcast.
Welcome back to Zilch, your podcast full of monkeys. Before we get going, I'd like to thank you all for being with us. Today, we are celebrating our 10th anniversary with this episode. So happy anniversary, Zilchers. And we love all of you that have ever been part of this show, who listen to the show, or are part of the Facebook page. Thank you so much for being with us along the ride. You have made the monkeys fandom fun. Love you all. We have a lot to talk about today, but before we do, let's get into some monkeys news. Our friends over at The Real Peter Torque Official sent us this great news. Hey Torquies, exciting news is underway. The New England Music Hall of Fame has alerted us that they would like to induct our own Peter Torque into their 2024 New England Music Hall of Fame solo inductees under the category of 2024 Posthumous Inductees. You can learn more about the proposed honor at www.nemhof.com/inductees. You will see the entry for Peter and with his buddy James Lee Stanley as mentioned in his write-up. So check that out. The New England Music Hall of Fame's mission is to unite, educate, influence, promote, and preserve the integrity of New England's music and the people who represent it. Representatives from the Hall of Fame are in contact with Peter's family, and the Peter Torque official Facebook page will keep you all posted as they learn more about how things are progressing. They go on to say, "We are so very thrilled for Peter and his loved ones and are deeply grateful to the New England Music Hall of Fame for the honor of this tribute. Congratulations, boss." Signed, the Peter Torque Facebook team. So congratulations to everyone over there, and congratulations to Peter and his family and James Lee Stanley and everybody mentioned. In other monkeys news, The Birds, the Bees, and the Monkeys in Mono is coming out on Record Store Day on April the 20th, 2024. It is being released by Friday Music with a quantity of only 2,000 being made. The blurb on the Record Store Day webpage says their 1968 classic smash album in monophonic sound on stunning coral vinyl in a gatefold cover, a lot of first, features their smash hit singles Daydream Believer, Valerie, plus fan favorites I'll Be Back Upon My Feet, Zorn Zam, and Tapioca Tundra. This album is mastered impeccably from the Cold Gems Records 1968 mono tapes by longtime Monkees reissue producer Joe Raguso. The Monkees on 420 in mono. That one goes out to the Frotis Queens, Jamie and Shannon. So 420 in mono. So like groovy, man. So today we turn towards the main course. Please welcome Glenn Gretlin and Mark Kleiner of 7A to discuss Davy Jones, The Bell Record Story. Welcome, gentlemen, to Zilch.
Thank you. How are you doing, Ken?
I'm doing about as good as anyone could hope to. We're getting to talk about Davy Jones. You can't be sad and talk about Davy Jones. Right, Mark?
Amen. Amen. Absolutely. I'm getting excited just as we ramp up here on this conversation. It's great.
There we go. And we are so glad to have you here to talk about the Davy Jones, The Bell Record Story. I'm going to do a little bit of the verbiage, the sales tag, if you will, right? 7A is proud to present Davy Jones, The Bell Record Story, a lavish reissue of Davy Jones' self-titled album, remastered with six bonus tracks, The CD version comes with a big 36 pages, that's 36 whopping color page booklet, extensive liner notes from the Monkees historian Mark Kleiner, hey, that's you, and a rare and previously unseen pictures. This reissue gives fans the opportunity to reassess an album that was unfairly neglected by record buyers at the time of its initial release in the fall of 1971. So let's talk about how this came to be and how we got to where we are, the origin story of this album. Mark, I'm going to look at you because you're kind of our historian here today.
Yeah, thanks, Ken. Well, this was a... You know, we're now, this album has long been remembered as, a commercial, I guess it was a commercial failure, but it had a modest hit single in Rainy Jane. And so this is kind of a reassessment of it. And so my task in writing this note was to tell the history of it. And got to say that it's not, sometimes it gets lumped in with Changes as being kind of, you know, thrown off. And, Davey himself did not have a lot of kind things to say at points in his career about this album, but it's great early 70s sunshine pop. And there was quite a bit of muscle put behind it and intent. And so that's part of the story that gets told in the liner notes is that, I spoke with people at Bell Records. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to speak directly with Jackie Mills about this. I reached out and made efforts to connect with him before he died, but he did pass away. And I never spoke directly with Davey about this record, but there were some comments on the record that I drew on, including Eric Lefkowitz had a good quote in the second version of Monkey Business, his book. And kind of the crux of the story may be that there was a falling out with Bell Records that Davey has talked about. He wanted Talia to be born as a British national, and so turned down a tour with Tony Orlando and Dawn at a critical time in the promotion of this album. So that's kind of the bad news side of it, you know, that it didn't sell particularly well. The good news is there's some great songs on here, including on this package, Girl, which I think is standout, you know, in Davey's solo canon. And that's an opinion shared by Linda Jones, for instance, Davey's first wife. And that's on here. And I talk a little bit about a couple of the musicians on there. You know, Hal Blaine is playing on that cut.
If I can just pitch in and say, I think, Mark, you have done absolutely an outstanding job on these liner notes, and you've really told the whole story really well. And it's very, I mean, there's a lot of stuff there that I didn't know about. And you've done so much research and talked to so many people. And that's why the CD booklet is 36 pages. It's pretty much the max we can fit into the CD. And it tells an important and interesting story because Davey was at a crossroads, wasn't he? To having just, after Changes and splitting up with the Monkees. And this is the first sort of real solo album, you know, sort of apart from the early one he did for Colpix. And his career could, at this point, could go in different directions, really. And you actually talk about that in the liner note, that it could be, it could have been a completely different path, completely different songs. But, you know, without giving too much away, it certainly wasn't, sort of thrown together the album. You know, you saying that he had lots of meetings with Jackie Mills, meetings that, you know, over several weeks and months. And there was a lot of talk about what to put on the album. And it wasn't just like a rush job or so. There was a lot of thought behind it, wasn't there?
Indeed. I think that was a part of the story that wasn't, you know, that I hadn't heard before. And it was partly also talking with Lenny Roberts, the original engineer on the album. He talked about what it was like. And he was incredibly busy in those years. He's also worked with Cher and compared Davey and Cher in terms of their work ethic. But also he had particular memories of working and remembering Davey's buoyant spirit in making the record. And, there was a trip to England, woodshedding material, and a lot of the songs. I mean, some of them had been, there's a few that had been prior recorded. I guess the term virgin songs that I heard from Mickey Dolenz was expressly written for the project. There were some of those, for sure. And I believe Road to Love was one of those tracks, and that's a real standout. Carol Carmichael.
It's a great album opener, isn't it? It's a great way to open the album. But Mark, this is what you've done extremely well. You've actually managed to track down Jackie Mills' secretary, is that right?
Yeah, so one of the people involved with his publishing company, and the secretary there spoke with her, and that was great.
So if you can't get Jackie Mills, well, you can get the next big thing, that's the secretary who remembers all the meetings they had. And I think this is great, you know, that Mark has been able to track these people down. Who would have, you know, who else would have been able to do that? So I really appreciate what you've done with this album. And I learned so much by reading the notes myself that I didn't know.
Well, anytime you get something from 7A with Mark Kleiner involved, it's always a fountain of information. I just want to go on the record as that. You mentioned Tony Orlando and Don in that possible tour that sadly never happened. That's really the wheelhouse that this album is in. That and the Carpenters. It does not sound out of place from what was going on when this album was originally recorded. You know what I mean? It's kind of on point as to what softer pop was, if you will. And that was everything from sing-along songs like Tie a Yellow Ribbon or Yesterday Once More or whatever. But it's not far removed. It's also not far removed from like a song like Someday Man. Would you agree?
No, I agree. I agree. And that is the kind of sound that was around at the time. And it's a sound that suited Davey extremely well. And I can easily see why he went down that road.
Yeah, I think Someday Man may have hinted at a more adult contemporary direction. That's part of the discussion in the note. That maybe had Dick Jones been, this is still playing more to his established fan base. And at this point, the Monkees is in Saturday morning reruns. He still has a profile in the teen magazines. And remember talking to his publicist, I think it was Bob Lewinson. I'm just saying that, you know, it was tougher to get him into like the teen mags was kind of a lock at this point. So that was kind of his base. And then Someday Man kind of hinted at taking him into a more, you know, where Carpenters are going to have like a wider demographic, perhaps would help Jones to maybe, you know, age into a new market. But this was playing a little bit more squarely, although a song like Road to Love, and interestingly, the album did very well, relatively speaking, on the adult contemporary charts, you know, both on Billboard and Cashbox, for whatever that was worth in sales. It way outperformed on those charts as opposed to the pop charts. So interesting looking at it from that vantage point. And certainly the arranger, Al Capps, is that right?
Yeah.
He was a real pretty critical to the sound. He worked a lot with Jackie Mills, and Lenny Roberts was really drawing our attention to Spiral Staircase's I Love You More Today Than Yesterday as being the kind of quintessential Al Capps sound, and comparing that to what was done on this record as being very much along those lines. So if you remember the Rhino series, Have a Nice Day, I think they ended up doing, I don't know, 14 volumes of this one hit wonders of the early 70s kind of thing. It was, you know, Spiral Staircase is on there. I believe Rainy Jane is on one of those volumes, I'm pretty sure. And very much in that vein. So this is part of the ongoing conversation. If Davey went more intently AC, you know, would that have fared better in the long run? Hard to say, because one of the things to remember is that the MGM recordings, the few of them that there were very much in that direction. And those commercially did worse than this, right? So, yeah. You know, like so much in the music business, I mean, there's so many multitude of factors and, you know.
But it is a high, when you think about it, it is a high production value to all of these songs. And Bell Records definitely spent considerable money and time on it. And it shows. I mean, you when you hear the big orchestras, you hear, you know, Al Capps conducting and arranging. It's not something that was done on the cheap. So Bell obviously had, you know, intent behind it and really wanted it to work. And that's probably a part of the story that a lot of people, you know, that you tell well in the liner notes, that a lot of people didn't know about how much they actually put behind it.
And I know for myself, when I saw that episode of the Brady Bunch, it's so good that we have a behind the scene in studio recording of Girl, right?
Yeah.
That's a joke. That's a joke, folks.
Yeah.
Because I don't think that guy was credited on anything. The person from the TV show.
Thank you, girl, for making the morning brighter, girl, for making the nighttime nicer, girl, for making a better world for me. I'm telling you, girl.
You're referring to the engineer on the Brady Bunch, that actor?
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, I did interview him.
You did?
I did. His name escapes me at the moment, but I did track him down. I believe, I don't know if he's still with us. He remembered. Anyway, I have nothing anecdotally overly interesting to share. He was really sweet, really kind to talk to. And, but again, yeah, that's another.
Just one of those character actors that we all grew up with.
And, exactly. You know, it's like that.
That guy. Yeah, that guy.
Just for the record, Britt Leach was the gentleman I spoke with. He is very much still alive, and he is the character actor, a great CV. You can check it out sometime. But, you know, you got like Partridge Family and Murder, She Wrote and Coach. Amazing stories. So interesting cast.
Just about everything.
Kind of along those lines. Yeah. So
he was definitely in our homes, and Davey was in our record collection. So there you go. It all works out. You know, you mentioned Bell Records and 16 Magazine. At this time, we had Donny Osmond, Michael Jackson, and the Partridge Family. This was the competition now for that magazine. And Partridge Family were also on Bell Records, if I remember correctly.
Same label.
Yeah. You know, so you wonder how that tour with Tony Orlando and Don might have helped kick this off as far as sales. I mean, you get to hear some Monkey hits, and then you get to hear this new stuff. That on top of him doing the Brady Bunch, it could have really worked, you know, as far as propelling it a bit further. Glenn, what made you decide that this one deserved the 7-8 treatment?
Well, I've known about the album ever since. Obviously, I've been a Monkees fan since I was a teenager. But what really stands out is that although there have been reissues in the past, there's been nothing certain in the last 10 years or more. And if I went onto Amazon to try and pick up a CD copy, it just wasn't available. Mm-hmm. And whatever the last reissue was, it wouldn't have been a very big run because, you know, the CDs are very expensive and not available anywhere. And I thought this album really deserves to be out there. It deserves to be back on the shelves. And I really want to try and give it the, as you say, the 7-8 treatment to get it back out there for the fans. I know a lot of fans have the original album, but the thing to note here is that the masters here are taken from the Japanese master. So Sony have access to the Japanese master tape, and that's where we got our dub from, and we've remastered it straight from that. So we really sort of made it sound as good as we possibly could. I'm very pleased with how it's come out, and I'm delighted with Mark's liner notes and Henry Dills' photos on the inside. I just think it deserves it. It's an important album in Monkey history, and there are some songs on there like "Look at Me" written by David Gates, mm-hmm. which I think is an outstanding track, and you know "I'll Believe in You," which is one of the bonus tracks that we got on here. I think it's one of the most beautiful songs that Davey ever sang. There's some really important songs on here, and I just think that it deserves to be back out there available to all the fans.
Agreed. 100%. I know that like songs like "Welcome to My Love," that's a great track. "Road to Love," "Rainy Jane," this is just really good pop perfection. And it's from one of our favorite guys, our own lovable Davy Jones. Again, it's going to be remastered with 6 bonus tracks, rare and previously unseen photos. The CD comes with the 36-page booklet and extensive liner notes. So as far as personnel on the album, what do we know about that?
Well, I mentioned in the note, we didn't get all the names at those sessions into this note. There's a lot of them there. So I was quoting from that information. I think the ones I mentioned in the note, I mentioned Hal Blaine earlier. You know, Mike DC, who's on a bunch of that, you know, he's on Unattended in the Dungeon, the guitarist. You got Chef from the Elvis band. Is it Joey Chef? What was his name? From the TCOB band, you know. So it's all the heavyweight players, and it's United West Recorders. Like, it's the big room there, the room for like movie soundtracks and stuff. So that was the studio that later became Ocean Way. So that was a big Hollywood studio. So yeah, you got the best players, and then you got Davey then going in. I mean, the band would, you know, I think with minimum overdubs, I mean, it was pretty much off the floor with those guys. And then, you know, Davey would cut the vocal afterwards. I think Neumann microphone, I think, of some description. Yeah.
But it is interesting, Mark, because as we spoke about, it was one of those, what would have happened if you went out with Tony Orlando and Dawn? But instead, he kind of ended up touring Ireland and places like that, where riots almost broke out, didn't they?
There's a disastrous gig at the one. This was kind of like the story of Michael Nesmith and the First National Band going to Britain just as Joanne was breaking in the States. I don't know if Davey and Mike were dealing with the same talent advisor. But again, I think personal reasons, like, it was important to Jones to have Talia Bourne a British national. And so I think he was holding to that. And, you know, yeah. He later expressed his, you know, that he thought it wasn't professionally the best call. You know, the Ireland tour was not from most accounts, a great success. And it's kind of not an optimal way to be kind of pushing your product. So, and again, hindsight's 20/20. We can all be, what do they call it, a Monday morning quarterback, you know, whatever, quarterbacks. So it's the fact that we got these recordings. I remember speaking, I think I quoted on an earlier liner note, someone involved with the Bell Sessions that I really like, because I was kind of giving him this plaintive story about the coulda, shoulda, wouldas. And he said, man, life is running through us all. You know, these things all have kind of a life, you know, a lifespan to them. And, you know, at some point the arc descends, and, you know, and then we have this opportunity to reassess. And all these decades later, it's like, hey, wait a minute, that album is, that's pretty good. Like, let's put it on. Let's give it the proper hearing. It sounds pretty damn good.
Yeah, the mind does kind of wonder what could have been, but definitely. And we also know why Talia can't be president, right, of the United States. Just in case anybody was wondering, that's about as political as we're going to get here.
Yeah, exactly. The disputed birth certificate of Talia. Anyways.
And since you mentioned football, will be the only mention of Taylor Swift. So back to the show. I listened to this album seriously as an adult about 3-4 years ago. I never really gave it the chance. And I think a lot of Monkees fans are guilty of that, right? We want what we want from the guys. And if you really think about it, if you get all their solo stuff together, it kind of all starts to sound like Instant Replay anyway. You know what I mean? You can mush it all up and do the fabled fan made up albums, if you will. But if you love Davy Jones, you need this in your collection. I'm, as one Monkees fan to another, I'm telling you that.
100%.
And I had some good news this afternoon, actually, from our distributor, is that we've actually just sold out of the first pressing of the CD, which I couldn't believe. So I'm having to rush in more stock as soon as I can, because our American distributor has shipped out a lot more than expected. And that's great to hear, because it shows what a great following that Davey still has. And it's kind of unexpected as well. I mean, that we would sell out so quickly of the first pressing. But, you know, I think that's testament to David and how many people still love him.
I know that on the Zilch Facebook page, as soon as it came out, it was all over the place. So people are excited about it. Glad to see that this is happening. What else do you have in store?
Well, at the moment, obviously, I'm focusing on this one. But after that, Mark and I have done another project together, which is Davey's incredible album, reissue of that with a lot of bonus tracks. Because, again, that was an album that didn't really get a lot of distribution back in the late 80s when it was released on his own label.
Sorry, Glenn, I just got... Okay, Davey Jones Incredible makes the Davey Jones Bell album look like Fleetwood Mac Rumors by comparison.
Yeah.
Well, I mean, I'm just, it's, yeah, it was a self-released cassette, right? So Definitely.
And it's one that's been on my radar for a long time because I always felt it needed a really good reissue. And I've been working closely with David's estate on it, and they're very happy it's being released as well. And then Mark, again, has done an awful lot of research, which is fantastic. And even to the extent of trying to find out where these songs were recorded, and even some of the songwriters were quite difficult to find, which we can get into at a later stage, perhaps. But there was a song on there which was credited to Reckless Eric for many years, and it turns out he didn't write it. You know, I actually spoke to him, and I sent him the song, and he said, no, I didn't write it. So it's one of those moving in with Rico scenarios where the internet thinks that that person has written it, but he hasn't.
Wow.
So
yeah, it's bizarre. Yeah, it's another. We still haven't tracked down the writer of that mystery song. We did track down Eric Howell, the writer of She's Moving In With Rico. Very
yeah.
Cool. But this one remains. Do you want to divulge the title, Glenn, or do you want to leave?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Actually, there might be somebody. If there's anybody out there at all that knows who wrote the song Open Your Eyes, You're Only Dreaming on Davey's incredible album, please step forward and let us know because nobody else seems to know. And it's not Reckless Eric. Definitely not him.
Somebody knows something. This is one of those podcasts.
Yeah.
Very good. Well, if you have any information, and the name of the song is again?
Open Your Eyes, You're Only Dreaming.
Yeah.
And it's credited as Only Dreaming on the cassette itself, I believe. Yeah. So.
But obviously, these albums, we were thinking about releasing them at the end of last year, but then we had Mickey Dolenz Sings R.E.M. come out, and with all the publicity and all everything happening around that, that EP, we thought it best to move that back to the beginning, Davey's albums back to the beginning of this year, to really give it the attentions that they deserve to have. And they've actually become a lot better for that because we've had more time to sort of fine tune everything and make everything as good as we possibly could.
Well, I've often compared you guys to archaeologists, like monkeyologists or something, and how you put all this work into things and then you are able to assemble something that we didn't have before. I mean, from the first release, the MGM singles collection from Mickey, that was just, there was no way that we could get this all in one shot. And this is what you've done with each release as they came. So it's good that you're taking the time, and hopefully somebody will get that song title and song author hooked up together as to the reality of the situation. But I love what you've done. Why green? Why the color green for the album?
For the Bell album?
Yes, yes. We're picking the color green because he was on the Ireland tour? No, it couldn't be.
But there's no particular reason for it. I just thought it complemented the album sleeve. You know, I could have picked any color, to be honest. But I try to pick something that I think complements the cover and goes well together.
Well, it's good. I can sit here in my apple tree and look at that spinning on my turntable. And it'll all symmetry.
I assure you, it's got nothing to do with the Ireland tour.
There you go. Before we talk about the Mickey and the REM album, because that's like a whole story I want to talk to you about, are you excited by the fact that you sold out? I mean, you have to be, right? Of the CDs.
Well, yeah, it's just taken me by surprise. I mean, obviously, we can quickly get more stock in, but I'm surprised because, you know, obviously that's why you have pre-orders. You try to find out how many you need to press, but and it gives us time to get more stock in, which is great. It is quite difficult because quite often you find yourself sort of putting a finger in the air, trying to think how many should I press, and the only thing you have to lean against really are pre-orders, but they sometimes comes in waves, so it's quite difficult.
Understandable. So the lesson here, folks, is order early and often, right? The sooner you order, the sooner you'll get it. So you don't want to miss out.
That's right. The first place that'll get stock is deepdeepdiscount.com and importcds.com have the vinyl and the CD, and they'll be the first ones to ship out. So people might be lucky and get it slightly earlier if they order from any of those websites. And it's also available on Amazon and other all good record shops.
Yeah, Deep Discount's pretty fast. They usually get here before they're actually supposed to come out, which is a fun thing as a purchaser. So let's talk a little bit about the hubbub bub, the Dolenz Sings REM. There was no way when you had this thought that you would be sitting in the same place with Mickey Dolenz and REM by the record store that they met in you know, that was a fantastic scene.
Yeah.
Tell us all about that.
That was completely unexpected and something that you just can't make up. You know, that's something that it's sort of the whole marketing behind it kind of grew organically, and we didn't try to force it, and things just happened, you know, one after the other. And before Mickey even started recording the REM songs, I was in touch with REM's manager, Burgess Downs. Although they haven't been together, REM, since 2011, they retired in 2011, they still have a manager that looks after all the business, and that's what Burgess does. And I ran it past him, and he said, I'll run it past the guys, and he came straight back saying, they love it. They love the idea. They look forward to hearing the songs. So I kind of got his and their blessing, you know, straight away, which was nice. And then once the songs were recorded, I sent them over, and again, they were very complimentary and had those great quotes that we put inside on the back of the REM cover, a great quote by Michael Stipe and Peter Buck, and which again, I didn't expect. I didn't expect to get any sort of quotes back that we could even use on the cover or anything like that. But then I have to give credit where credit is due, and Jody Ritson came up with the idea of having a launch party inside the record shop where REM met, which is the one we have on the front cover, Wax Tree Records in Athens, in Georgia, which is amazing. It's still there after all these years. And she said, why don't we have a launch party there? So I think great idea. And obviously, straight away, we got all this publicity, which we did, you know, never thought about. And then Burgess, the REM manager, calls me and he says, the REM guys really like to meet Mickey, but they don't want to come down to the launch party because it's going to be too busy. Why don't you come home to my place and we're just going to have a quiet dinner, and it's just going to be us and a couple of others, not many at all. And I said, yeah, we'd love to. And that's how that happened, really. And then during the evening at his house, they said, we'll come by tomorrow as well, which again, wasn't on the cards. We only meant to meet in the evening. So they came by the next day at the launch party and supported the whole thing. And yeah, absolutely over the moon with how that went and how well that was received. And I personally loved the recordings. And Leaving New York, I think, is my personal favorite and probably in my, if not top five, certainly in the top 10 Mickey Dolan songs he's ever recorded. Yeah, so extremely pleased. And I hope we can do more in the future. Who knows? We'll see.
I was so happy for you, Glenn, when I watched it being streamed on YouTube. And it was wonderful because I know how much this means to you. I know how much you love Mickey Dolenz and the Monkees. I know how much you love REM too. And I was so happy for you.
Yeah, thank you.
Congratulations. Seriously. It was a wonderful time. And you can still find it on YouTube. So check out Glenn and a cast of Monkees and Mickey's fans and REM fans all up and down the street by Wax Tree Records there. It's definitely worth checking out. And Mickey got the key to the city, which means that they lock it up every so often.
Or lock it in the trunk, as it was. That was another key. Somebody locked his keys in the car keys in the trunk.
Oh, that's right. That's right. Yeah. On the day of, they went to move that car.
We found, or Jody or somebody found a car that would look very similar to the one on the front cover. We got the guy to turn out, and he was meant to collect Mickey from his hotel and drive him down to the record shop. So he was meant to have the sort of grand arrival in this big yellow Buick. The only problem is, when he got to the hotel to pick Mickey up, he locked the keys to the car inside the trunk. So Mickey comes out, and then this is the great thing, because I was there with the guys from REM, and we were all waiting for Mickey, and we couldn't understand why he was late. Until, you know, he calls through and says, you know, the key's on the trunk. And then Bill Berry, the drummer from REM, straight away says, I'll get my chauffeur to pick Mickey up. And that's very, you know, straight away, that's very kind of him. But then Burgess, the REM manager, steps in and says, no, don't worry, I'll pick him up. So he went straight and picked Mickey up drove him back to the launch party. And there was now several hundred people waiting outside. But that was quite a fun story and, something we can joke about after. But there were, you know, a few sort of nerve-wracking minutes there where we didn't know what was going on.
Well, thankfully, Mickey wasn't locked in the trunk.
Yeah, and also there was a homecoming parade the same day in Athens, and most of the roads were blocked. So we didn't know how Mickey was going to get there in the first place, but, you know, it all worked out in the end, as these things always do.
Yeah. The best laid plans of monkeys and men. Doesn't that sound like a monkeys episode? The best laid plans of monkeys and men. So,
just one final thing I remember, just so the memories keep coming back now. So we were waiting in Bertus's house, and this is before everybody else has turned up, and I walk in with Mickey, and Bill Berry is the first one there, and he walks straight up to Mickey and he says, "You're the reason why I started drumming." And Mickey says, "Oh, wow, you know, I was only faking it." But Bill said, "But I didn't know that." I was watching and it looked real to me, you know, and that just shows you how many people Mickey has inspired over the years, right? Who would have thought?
So what are your hopes for this release?
Well, I'm hoping that all the fans that even if they already have the original Bill album from back in the day, will give this another shot because, as I said, it's been remastered from the original Japanese master tape, and it really sounds, I think, as good as it'll ever do. It sounds amazing to my ears, and it's got all the bonus tracks on there, and we hope people will support it. You know, if replace the original copy with this reissue, have a look at Mark's liner notes, which are incredible, and I almost put my neck on the line and say, most of the people wouldn't know about the stuff that he's written there, because there's so much research that's gone into this that it's a really interesting story, and it's something that all the fans, all the Monkees fans, deserve to read really and to know about. And also there is that thing that I say every time, every release that we do pays for the next release. So we really do need people's support, and we hope that people will support this release so that we can release more Monkees related releases going forward.
I'm often blown away by how good these sound, these new versions that you're putting out. I'll do an A-B kind of a thing where I take the original releases of something, whether it's Nez's or something like that, and it just blows my mind how much better they do sound. These are fresh. It's you're not going to get a lot of crackle or anything. This is it. And it's green. So, hey, what's not to love, right?
Yeah. I mean, it is an area where some labels possibly try to save money and kind of don't pay enough attention. But it's something that's very important to us, the sound quality. And we got a gentleman called David Blackman from Hills & Grow Mastering, who I've dealt with for about 25 years now. A really good independent mastering studio in London. He's always done an amazing job on the Monkees related reissues that we've done, and I know that he puts a lot of time and effort into them, and that's so important.
Well, I have to put you in the hot seat again. I know you've talked about Davy Jones's Incredible coming up. Is there anything else you can hit us with?
There is another project, which I can't say too much about at the moment, but it's also a Davy Jones release. It's, I don't know, what sort of year would that be, Mark? Do you remember?
The other project that we're not going to mention? That's, you want me to give the era?
Yeah.
Yeah, it dates from 1979.
Yeah. Mm. So it is, again, it's one of those periods where, but there's not a lot of Davy material.
Wow. The mind boggles. Disco Davy, maybe? I don't know. Well, 1979, come on. That's right. Yeah, exactly. That's right there.
It's Disco DVD set.
It's more Ian Dury meets Davy Jones, really.
Oh, wow. So, I'd say something about it, but it might be something to do with toast. But that's all I'm going to say. But I'll just shut up before I am toast. So there we go. Mark, what do you got coming up? I know you're always busy and, you know, you do a lot for the fandom as well.
Well, I just made a note. My next project, interview Bill Berry's chauffeur.
Oh.
Right. Yes. Yes. you have to try and find him on his 240-acre estate somewhere.
Okay. Wow.
He's a Bill Berry, wonderful guy. So down to earth. I mean, just all of them were, you know, and this is what really struck me, you know, even the mayor. I mean, everybody in that we met in Athens, Georgia was so friendly and so down to earth, and it was just incredible. Felt really sort of at home. So, yeah, couldn't ask for more.
So, the Davy Jones, the Bell Record story, you can order it where, Glenn?
Deepdiscount.com and importcds.com.
All the usual suspects. Originally released in 1971, The Bell Records Story, Davy Jones, It's Sounding Better Than You've Ever Heard It Before. If you've never heard it before, now's the time. What you waiting for? Get your order in at Deep Discount or Amazon or...
all good record shops, really. It's available everywhere. If you Google it, we got really good distribution on this one. But importcds.com and deepdiscount.com are the fastest sites, but obviously on Amazon as well.
Very good. And I want to encourage you to go to 7arecords.com. You will see an entire catalog and gallery of all these releases. And I'm not sure that people realize how you like number your product, which I'm an obsessive weird nerd, right? But like you can tell like when, like the order that these came out in, if you look at the catalog number, right?
Yeah. The only thing is, and this is what you might notice sometimes, and exactly what's happened here, this Davy Jones title, the CD is 7A056, which is an earlier number than Mickey's REM EP.
Mm-hmm.
So that kind of tells you that we had to push it back. And so originally, this was intended to come out before that, but then that whole REM thing happened, and we didn't want that to overshadow this release. So sometimes you have to move things around. But yes, in general, it will tell you what order they came out in.
So collect them all and organize them accordingly.
Alphabetically.
There you go. Well, I want to thank you guys for being on the show today and all of the times you've been on Zilch. Seriously. Well,
we can't thank you enough, Ken, for all your support. Thank you so much.
Well, my support will always be here for you. Thank you so much for being here. And again, go to 7A.com, check it out. Get Davy Jones, The Bell Records Story, either on CD or vinyl or both. And you can be with me as we sit in the apple tree and watch the green spin around. It'll be wonderful. Well, thank you for coming on Zilch.
Thanks, Ken. You take care.
Bless you as well.
Mark, thank you so much again. And let's be in touch soon. I really appreciate it.
You bet. Thank you both.
Mark, I love you. And if we don't talk again, I want you to know it. And same to you, Glenn. Okay. You just never know. Life is short. This is limited, limited collectible.
Likewise, Ken, but let's hope we do.
All right.
Okay.
We will see you.
You take care. Take care.
Bye-bye.
Thanks. Bye.
We had a bunch of sad news back in February. Recording engineer Hank Sokolow has passed away. He worked at RCA Records in Hollywood, California. He recorded The Monkees for Cold Gems Records and so many others. In total, he did 4 albums with the band, including The Monkees, More of the Monkees, Live 1967, and Headquarters. All 3 studio albums with the group went multi-platinum, each reaching number 1 on the Billboard charts. But one of the greatest albums that Hank recorded was Carole King's Tapestry. His goal was to make it as comfortable for Carole and the musicians, and one of the ways that he did that was turning the lights out on the control booth. He and producer Lou Adler sat back and recorded history. Rest in peace, Hank Sokolow. Andrew Sandoval shared this on his social media and Facebook page. Last night, I learned that recording engineer Hank Sokolow had passed. He was 91. He had a very long and incredible career in audio, and to highlight only his work with the Monkees would be a disservice to his professional legacy. Nevertheless, that is how I made a connection with him some 30 years ago for an interview that has stood the test of time and has been featured in numerous writings that I have done ever since on the band. And it was amazing. He even recalled as much as he did when, as he told me, his days as an RCA staff engineer were stacked. Here's a quote from Hank. In order not to lose what I had going with other clients and the way RCA was set up in those days, I was working like 100 hours a week. Although the Monkees things were important because we were doing scoring, underscoring stuff with Shorty Rogers and whatever. At the same time, I was trying to do Duke Ellington, Vic Damone, Peggy Lee, and all those other acts. There was a lot of stuff going on in those 2 years, 1966 and 1967. I had 7 days off the whole year, and I worked over 100 hours a week. In fact, Hank was one of the only factors of continuity in the Monkees' first 18 months of recording. When they went from producer to producer and eventually became a band in their own right, the Monkees trusted and respected Hank and even gave him the sole writing credit on their song, No Time. As a sincere gesture for putting in long hours with them, notably, he also worked with Michael Nesmith on the solo instrumental project The Wichita Train Whistle Sings. Andrew goes on to say, I want to thank Hank for his contribution and to giving me a solid interview back when I was just an 18-year-old, cold calling him, hoping to learn as much as possible. May his work live on and bring joy to those who listen. Hint, every time you hear those words, 7A, that opens Daydream Believer, that's Hank's voice. Rest in peace, Hank. Before we go, I'd like to take a moment to talk about a few things. This was brought to my attention over at the Steve Hoffman forums. A poster by the name of Iceman08 writes, reminds me of podcast Zilch's Ken Mills, who likes to be called the Podfather, when he seriously declared in one of his latest podcasts that one of Davey's songs from Manchester Boy totally sounds like The Doors! Explanation mark. I was laughing so hard when someone so desperately tries to fight for Davey's critical acclaim. Be careful, his next comparison may have to do with Davey and Led Zeppelin's 80s mullet Davey doing the hippie hippie shake. Well, Iceman, I'd like to clear this up. I got the name Podfather as a nickname. I never really needed people to call me that. It was just a funny thing that happened. I helped a lot of people get their start in podcasting, and I used to teach folks how to edit podcasts to get their networks up and running, to get them set up, and how to publish their shows to iTunes and stuff like that, and things like what software to use, what kind of microphones to get, stuff like that. So I tried to help a lot of people out. So that's where that nickname came from. Again, it's nothing, you know, I don't care if I'm called that, but it's more of a giggle than anything. Like a lot of the stuff that I say is said with a wink, you know. Davy Jones is definitely no Jim Morrison. And as some people say, Jim Morrison as well, he's no Davy Jones.
He's no Davy Jones.
And he's no Davy Jones either.
He's no Davy Jones.
I never meant to say that Davy Jones sounds like The Doors, but the song King Lonely the Blue off of Manchester Boy has a backing track that reminds me of The Doors in its instrumentation. It seems like the song is a bit of an homage to the song Love Me Two Times. Here are bits of the two songs for comparisons. Just listen to them musically, not the singing, but the vibe that I believe that the musicians were going for when they recorded King Lonely the Blue.
If I could have anything that I want to
time, girl, I'm gone away.
I believe it was done on purpose to try to get that vibe, that same kind of vibe. The success of that is up to the individual, as in all things, your mileage will vary. But to me, the music is very similar, and all I meant to say is that this is probably the closest thing that you will ever hear as far as if Davy Jones ever were to have fronted The Doors. So, no, Davy Jones does not sound like Jim Morrison or The Doors, and I'm sorry if anyone did not understand the wink in my voice, but thank you, Iceman08. Stay cool. So as we end this episode, I have some sad news. As for now, you are listening to the last episode of Zilch for a while, at least. I simply do not have the time with all of my work schedule to continue to do this show in a manner that it and Monkees fans deserve. I've been through many health battles and many health victories, and I am still here. I have learned that there is a balance to all things in life, like we all need to do, and I need to spend more time in the real world, not so much editing this show. The Zilch Facebook page will stay open. We have an amazing community there. If I feel like it's something I want or need to do, or I or others may reappear here, the lights will still stay on. The podcast will still be up to stream and download. There are still shows that I want to do. Who knows, maybe in time. I'm also editing this show on my old editing computer that I started with back in 2006. And we started Zilch in 2014, so that computer's old and it's getting decommissioned as it should be. And I would have to get new software and a whole new learning curve all over again. So who knows? We made it 10 years, and together we've all been through so much. We had no idea when we got together to record this one-off episode, which was a special for our KISS podcast, The Podkiss, that was to feature the Monkees. It was only supposed to be one episode. Jeff Hewlett, Craig Cohen, and Chris Karam, and I got around the mic and just had fun talking about the Monkees. We felt that they needed some love, and their fans deserved it as well. It was shocking to find so many people were interested, and we started the Facebook group and made it its own podcast. In 2014, we had no way of knowing what good times were ahead. We had no plans, but we wanted to be like a combination of 60 Minutes meets the Monkees, several hosts discussing the Monkees in all of its various forms and incarnations. I would like to think that we did pretty good covering their music as a band and as solo artists, the TV show and them as a live act, all the people from behind the scenes and all the facets of this things that we call the Monkees. After the first few shows, we reached out to Sarah Clark, who became a podcaster in her own right, author Melanie Mitchell, and people like Jeff Geringer, David Ghosty Wills, Tim Powers, Melinda Gildart, Fred Velez, the great Michael Lynch, and his Hubble Benson All-Stars, who did our opening theme music, our announcer Chelsea Epstein, Luba Binga, who worked behind the scenes getting audio interviews that I used in the show, and thank you, Lou, for that, Al Bigley, the Fab Four, Artie, Gavin, Joe, Adam, and Ron McNeil and the Monkey Men, and of course, Monkees Expo promoter Jody Ritson. Our first few guests were drummer Rich Dart of the Monkees touring band Coco Dolans, Cersei Link and Christian Nesmith, Mickey's Daughters and Davy's Daughters and Davy's Angels. Annabelle Jones and Anita Weinberg were friends of the show as well. Craig Smith, Megan Stem Wade, Derek Minier, Bronwyn Mox did some cool segments for us. The great Tom O'Keefe, who made St. Louis a place to be for Zilchers from around the world. Those concerts were legendary, fantastic times. Our friends, John Billings, his wife Amy and their family, Dave Alexander, we miss you, Wayne Avers, Pete Finney, Rosemarie, Alex Jules, Amin Zarukian, Probin Gregory, James Lee Stanley, Jason Chesney, Peter Mills, author of The Great Head Book, you should check it out, Nez's friend, Ed Heffelfinger, Ian Lee, Glenn Gretlin, Mark Kleiner, Courtney Cronin Dold, good friend of mine, and Danny Salazzi and the characters, Bill Chadwick, and from the Monkeying Around podcast, Charles Kelso, Veronica Daschle, and Elaine Sweatman, thank you for being friends and for continuing on. We had the Dancing Smoothies. Roseanne Welsh came on the show and became part of Monkees 101. And of course, the amazing Bobby Hart and the lovely Valerie Carey's Vinay. We'd also like to thank Mark over at Monkees Live Almanac and so many others. But we need to thank Bob and Bert and all of the cast and crew of the TV show, the folks who worked on the records, from the musicians, engineers, producers, and all along the way, and yes, even Don Kirshner. Yes, even Don Kirshner. We are amazed that Andrew Sandoval joined us, and it's been great getting to know him, and thank you for all you've done for Monkees fans. We'd also like to thank John Hughes, who was part of Rhino, and he got involved with the show, and he and his team realized the potential that Zilch had, and it was great. And it was great hearing from Rhino and Warner and it not be a cease and desist. So thank you, John Hughes, and everybody there at Warner Rhino. We'd also like to thank Adam Schlesinger, producer of the Monkees album Good Times, the music from That Thing You Do, Fountains of Wayne, and so many other things. And of course, the Monkees. There would be no Monkees without Davy Jones. Though we never had a chance to have him on the show, his spirit definitely filled our podcast and our hearts. And of course, Michael Nesmith, who enjoyed the show. He came on and even showed up in times when we didn't think he was going to be here. that was interesting. And Mickey Dolans, the great Mickey Dolans. And of course, Peter Tork. We got pretty close with Peter. He, his family, and team are amazing. Peter called us his Zilch team, and we were and always will be that. When we met Peter in St. Louis, Peter was very sick, and he still showed up to do the show and meet us. It was a night I will never forget. Thank you, Peter, for all you are. You were the real deal. And of course, our Bonnie. You know who you are. Who knew the monkeys and their families would join us? Sometimes you have dreams that come true that you never even knew that you had. That is and was Zilch. I wanted to reach beyond the podcast, but I was alone in the middle of the country, and we wanted to make these buttons to give away at the shows for free. How to do it? It seemed impossible. Then we met the button queen, Christine Wolf. She figured out how to do it, and she, along with all the button ambassadors from around the world, got those buttons everywhere. The Zilch gatherings, whether they were in Dallas, LA, Australia, Japan, or St. Louis, we made friends around the world. It was great seeing them on the AXSTV Live Monkeys concert, where so many great and cool friends that we love to this day were there on TV wearing them and the Zilch shirts. It was so cool. On the Facebook page, someone took a picture of when they were in China. They had left a Zilch button on the Great Wall of China. So we went pretty far, folks. So thank you, Button Queen. Thank you, Christine, for making that happen. Christine also became a co-host on the show, and she became an editor in her own right. And it's great having her by my side. The sales of our merchandise, t-shirts and whatnot, coffee cups, and the buttons promotions, we were able to help a lot of people. And for several years in a row, all the proceeds from the sales of merch from our podcast, be it Zilch, the Podkiss, Cheap Talk, and Pop, went 100% to donations, sometimes to fight cancer, and sometimes we help folks who are down on their luck, and we did the best we could, because we all need a hand from time to time. To all of the fans who have been on the show, I could name you all, but the show would never end. You know who you are, and I thank you all for being part of it in so many ways. We were more than friends. We were more than fans. We were more than a podcast. We were more than a band. We were with one another, with buttons, smiles, and music holding us all together, and at the heart of it all, the monkeys. I always felt that monkeys fans kind of got the short end of the stick. We wanted monkeys fans to not feel alone, and I hope that we bridged those gaps. There are roundtables and TV episodes that we didn't get to talk about, so who knows? I'm tired, and it's been a long and fun 10 years. I tried to bring you all the best that we could. And if this is it, it has been wonderful. And if this is it, there is one more thing that we need to remember, that we were born to love one another. This is something we all need. Be kind. Show love. Live love. Be love. I hope that we left the campsite better than when we got here. And I mean this, I love you. Thank you for listening. Thank you for being part of it all. And thank you for letting me be part of it all. Peace. So for now, I'm Ken Mills, and if you ever hear my voice again, I probably still will be. So until next time, take some time to monkey around. Take it away, Peter. Thank you.
Okay, you ready?
Yes, I'm ready.
Okay. Hi, this is Peter Tork, and you're listening to Zilch, a Shoe Suede Blues podcast. Hi, this is Peter Tork, and you're listening to Zilch, a Peter Tork podcast. Hi, this is Peter Tork, and you're listening to Zilch. It's a Monkeys podcast.
I was doing an interview once, and they asked me if there's any last words I wanted to do, and I said, be a hero to yourself. And it kind of just popped out of my mouth. But the more I think about it, the more I like it, the more real it becomes to me. Being a hero to yourself means that one, me, you, is in charge of one's own life. There's so much goes on. People say, who do you think you are? And who I think I am is who I really think I am. And I get to operate from that basis and not on the basis of what you want from me or what you think is better for me to be or do. I know that what you want from me is important to you, but it doesn't constitute an emergency on my part. I get to be a hero to myself. I recommend it.
Seemed so clear.
Ah, one another, ah, one another, ah, one another, ah, one another.
And that's our show. Zilch is an online nonprofit Monkees audio fanzine made by fans for fans. Any samples of music or interviews heard remain property of their owners. We are not related to the Monkees or any of their members past or present. We are not affiliated with Rhino or Ray Burt. If you hear anything you like from the band, go on Amazon or iTunes and buy it. If you enjoyed the show, like us on Facebook and rate us on iTunes. Thank you for listening. Until next time, I'm your announcer, Chelsea Epstein, saying always take some time to monkey around.